This is the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000.
All right, let's talk.
Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Adam Gold.
Fairy tales are supposed to have happy endings, right, Alec? Right? They're supposed to. When Hollywood sends out these scripts like Pretty Woman, when Edward Lewis, the big business tycoon that buys companies and busts them up for profit, played by Richard Gere, needs a girlfriend to accompany him to events while in Los Angeles, and he hires Vivian Ward, who's an escort. That's Julia Roberts. And he falls in love. And she falls in love. Remember she, I'm trying to remember the actress that portrayed her friend was Kit. When she, like, they're not supposed to kiss. Don't kiss. Oh, you kissed him. Well, man, the jig is up. We understand all of that. Well, the happy ending comes when he comes to her apartment after he had already sent her home with a wad of cash that she gave most to her friend. And she was going to go move to San Francisco to live with her sister. But he comes to her apartment, head out of the sunroof of the limousine, and there's opera music blaring. He's got flowers, and it's a tearjerker. And I melt. I cry every time. That's the happy ending. Well, we didn't get that at Bank of America Stadium yesterday. Not a happy ending, or as we say, the full Robert Kraft. It was the opposite of the happy ending because the Panthers lost. Unfortunately, to the Washington football team. Now, here's my... Well, not only did they lose, they lost to Ron Rivera. They lost to Taylor Heinicke. They lost to the Washington football team running game. All of that is bad. And I appreciate the optimism that Cam Newton's presence brought. I loved the hype of the introductions. I loved the execution on the opening drive. I loved the fake quarterback draw pass to DJ Moore for the touchdown. I love the zone read off the left side for the 25-yard touchdown run in the second quarter. I love the touchdown pass to Christian McCaffrey. That was the best play of the entire game, if you ask me, that made it 21-21. But there was also a lot to not love. There were poor choices as to which receiver to throw the ball to. He missed a wide-open McCaffrey on one play. Instead throwing it to a covered DJ Moore. Now he caught it, but he didn't go anywhere. There were some poor throws. There were some deflections that I think were probably more Cam's fault than not. He held the ball too long. My own feeling, and I've thought about this for a long time, is that Cam's shoulder's never going to be right. It's never going to be the guy that we saw, whether he didn't play the first 9 weeks, or 10 weeks, or however many weeks, or not, that the shoulder is never going to be such. The foot's not the problem. Is can he get the ball to where it needs to be? Easily. And he really can't anymore. And maybe, in retrospect, the worst coach to play was his former coach, the guy who saw Cam's shoulder deteriorate in front of him. And Ron Rivera probably knows what Cam is capable of or not capable of when it comes to throwing the ball. Probably needs to be a run-heavy package before it can be a short passing package. And we also had it in living color in our face that Matt Rhule and clock management are oil and water. So let's start there, Alec. About 3.5 minutes left. It's fourth and 11? It doesn't really matter what it was. It was 4th and 4. I think it would have been an easier... Off the top of my head, I don't even remember what it was, what they needed to gain. But it's 4th down, and he sends the punt unit on the field. And the crowd boos. Matt, the punt isn't the worst thing you could do there. I'm not saying that's what my suggestion would be, but it's justifiable. Your defense is good, even though it wasn't during the game. I get it. You've got 3 timeouts left plus the 2-minute warning. You can even give up a first down and still be in pretty good shape if you punt the ball back. But what you can't do is what you did. Let the crowd influence your decision. And they ended up wasting a timeout, sending the offense back on the field, and they didn't get it. Here's Matt Rhule on going for it on fourth.
Yeah, I mean, analytically, you should punt that ball. So, you still have three timeouts. Start to go punt the ball, and then just, you know, because Cam doesn't truly know the two-minute, you know, as well as, like, maybe he'd like. And, I said, hey, I got Christian McCaffrey. They haven't stopped him all day. Let's take a shot at it. So still knew I had the, you know, two-minute warning and knew that kind of like the way it played out at the end, we'd get the ball back with a minute and a half if we need to go down and score a touchdown. So, you know, first started going with, you know, probably what's traditionally football-wise what you should do, and then just said, hey, let's give these guys a shot to go make a play. I thought they would make the play. We made it. We just came up half of a yard short.
Half of a half of a yard short. I think that's 10 inches. Quarter of a yard short, I think.
It was fourth and three, by the way.
It was fourth and three. That's right. And the pass to the line to gain, McCaffrey came back just short of it and made the catch, but couldn't gain any yards after the catch, and that was that. I'm in favor of going for it there. But I'm not in favor of going for it the way you did it. First of all, you make the decision to go for it before third down, not after third down. You make the decision before third down, and you run through the scenarios. If it's fourth and less than this, then we're going for it. If it's fourth and more than that, we're punting. I can't imagine the number is 3 yards. Analytically, he says you should punt the ball. Sure. I don't know. Maybe not. I don't even know if that's the analytics, because the analytics are all done in a vacuum. And analytics, pardon me for saying this out loud as a 55-year-old man, analytics suck because they don't tell you everything. They tell you what has happened. It's not a predictive outcome. It just isn't. Those fourth down bots that you see on Twitter, those aren't really good to use. They're fun, but they're not good to use because they don't take into account the differing teams and all of that. So we have to stop relying on those to make our decisions for us. But what it did show was that Matt Rhule is indecisive in these moments, and you can't be. You have to know what you're going to do before the situation comes up, and clearly they didn't. So you kind of get what you deserve. As it turns out, burning the timeout didn't even cost them, because Washington's running back Gibson ran out of bounds, so they still got the ball back with 150, and they couldn't do anything with it. They picked up a first down, but it wasn't that good. I'm waiting for the sign. Alec, have you seen the sign?
I have not seen the sign yet, Adam.
I have not seen the sign that Matt Rhule's the guy.
Yeah.
I want him to be the guy because I think Matt Rhule is a genuinely good human being. I root for good people, but I'm waiting. We're almost two full years in, and I haven't yet seen the sign. I'm not saying he isn't, but you are taking a leap of faith and basically just basing it on, well, they won this many games that year, and they're going to win this many games this year, as though that's the way it really happens. We have to see signs of progress. Because the worst thing you can do is have a good team, a really good team, and not be able to get anything out of it because you're making the same mistakes on the sideline over and over and over again. Here's Cam Newton saying that one group of people brought it, and the other fell short.
They up here at the end of the bargain. We just got to do our part, you know. I mean, the energy in there was electric. I mean, it was good juju in there. But characteristics as a team, we got to be better. Third down, got to have it situations. And coach had his, you know, keys to victory that we didn't execute in its totality throughout the game, and that's what it pretty much comes down to, you know. I did challenge the fans. The fans came, they saw, and, you know, they supported. And, you know, having an atmosphere like that and games moving forward in November, December, you know, it's pretty much going to come down to, you know, execution. And we didn't do that enough as a team here today.
I think there were some good signs, obviously. There were some not good signs that we'll talk about more throughout the day, but ultimately. I really thought, Alec, I thought the fans could win this game for them. The fans could not win this for the Panthers.
Oh, well, fans did their job. You know, they did their job.
Did
they? Showed up.
What was
cheered.
The final score?
I think it was,
27-21.
Yeah.
So the fans didn't do their job.
Well, the fans can only, they're not on the field. They can only do so much.
I thought home field advantage meant everything.
Yeah, maybe they just didn't scream loud enough. I don't know. Yeah, that's the thing about you opened up this with the fairy tale analogy, and that's the thing about this is that it's not a fairy tale, right? Like, it doesn't come down to the energy. It comes down to whether or not you are good enough to win. And the Panthers weren't good enough to win yesterday. Like, Cam Newton isn't a magic trick. He is not fairy dust. He doesn't, you know, sprinkle it around and suddenly make your offensive line better. He, you know, his smile doesn't suddenly make people better football players. Like, all of that stuff is it can only go so far. And at the end of the day, this was a losable game. Talked about it last week. Next week's a losable game too,
sure,
against Miami. I mean,
you know why they're losable games? Because the Panthers are just okay.
Here's what the Panthers are. They are better than they were with Sam Darnold.
That is correct.
I mean, that's what it is. And it was super fun. That's why I was very hesitant about all of this, or I was uncomfortable rather, with the hype that was coming with Cam Newton all last week. I understood it, but I was a little bit uncomfortable with it. And here we are, a day later, having lost to the Washington, D.C. Panthers. It's remarkable how many ex-Panthers, coaches, and players. I didn't even realize Joey Sly was kicking for them.
It felt like an inter-squad game. It really did.
When Sam Mills Jr., a man whose father has a statue outside of Bank of America Stadium, is coaching for the other team. Like, Rivera really just swept everybody up and took them up there.
Marty Herney, Ryan Vermillion, that's a different story.
Taylor Heineke.
I mean,
for a minute last year, you had Thomas Davis, you know, linebacking.
Kyle Allen was up there until getting hurt.
That's right.
The whole thing, they're getting the band back together. All right, so we're going to talk more about this game. We're going to talk about it with Will Brinson in just a second. Let me get to a couple of other things very quickly because Will is waiting in the wings and we need to talk to Will Brinson because I have missed him. Final week of the regular season is here in college football. Pitt wrapped up the Coastal Division with a win over UVA. Now it's down to the final two games in the Atlantic. Friday night at the Carter, State and Carolina. Pack wins. We all have to watch Wake at BC on Saturday. I'm not saying I'm not rooting for State, but man, I could use that time on Saturday. If you're going to make me watch Wake at BC, State, be good. Be really good Friday night against the Tar Heels. If UNC wins in Raleigh and a BC and BC beats the Deacons, then Clemson goes to Charlotte for a rematch with the Panthers. That's where we are in the ACC. And I would like to say thank you for playing our game, Michigan State. You got housed at the Horseshoe by Ohio State. Looking forward to Ohio State, Michigan on Saturday. See, I'd rather watch that game. I'd rather watch Ohio State, Michigan, and to see how will Jim Harbaugh lose again to Ohio State. Will Brinson, senior NFL writer, CBSSports.com, Pick 6 podcast moderator, joins us every Monday. We talked about the Panthers. Now let's talk about their precarious positioning in the NFC playoff race. They're right in the middle of it. There are 5 teams fighting for 2 spots in the NFC. You've got the Vikings and the Saints and the 49ers all at 5-5. The Eagles and the Panthers at 5-6. I'm going to eliminate Washington, Atlanta just for a second. I also think that because Washington and Atlanta have more difficult schedules, that they're not good. They probably won't win enough of those games anyway to make up the ground. Even though it's only a 1-game difference between Minnesota, New Orleans, the 49ers, and those other 2 teams. But anyway, let's get right to this. It could have been so different had the Panthers beaten Washington and the Packers had beaten Minnesota. Because the problem that the Panthers have is that they lose the tiebreakers to at least two of these teams, and they might end up losing the tiebreaker to New Orleans eventually if they don't beat the Saints the next time they play. They've lost to Minnesota. They've lost to Philadelphia. And that is, and if it ever came down to it, they've already lost to Washington. So Minnesota looks like a team to be reckoned with, though. They're playing really well offensively. They are creative in how they lose games, but they're also more than good enough to win these. I think the Vikings are kind of sneaky dangerous.
Yeah, they've got an incredible offense. I mean, Kirk Cousins, when he is protected and not under heavy duress, is like just puts up numbers, and you don't ever feel like he's blowing your mind with, you know, elite throws or, you know, his athleticism, but he just, you know, he makes good decisions. He pushes the ball down the field well. And Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen are a really nice combo right now. Jefferson is going off lately. They're sort of coming. If you look at the underlying usage, he was due for some big games. The one thing with Minnesota is that they 8 of their 10 games have had the results has come down to the final play of the game.
Right.
That is crazy. And they are 3-5 in those games. I believe every single game so far this season is a one score game for Minnesota. They are, you can look at it two ways. You can say one, okay, Minnesota is going to be in every game, right?
Yes.
And that they're going to give us a crazy close playoff game. And that's good. You know, that means you don't get blown out, and you know, you'd like to see them blow people out, you know, bad teams, but you know, they are in every game. So that's good. But you can also say, well, putting too much at like on the hands of fate here. You know, you're allowing the football gods and luck to play too much of a role into what's going to happen. And that's how football works. I mean, there's luck all the time. But, you know, you have a couple of bad bounces in a playoff game you're supposed to win, and all of a sudden, you know, you're losing, or it's coming down to you need a big kick at the end, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it cuts both ways. But, yes, Minnesota, absolutely dangerous and capable, if they're protecting Kirk Cousins, of beating anyone.
Well, they just beat the Packers, even though Aaron Rodgers did crazy things in the second half. It was 16-3 until, 30 seconds left in the first half when Green Bay scored. And then that game went sort of back and forth the rest of the way, but Minnesota wins it. They've only one of their games wasn't a one-score game. They had a win over Seattle. They won by 13. I think it was 30-17. But for the most part, you know, they won the game dramatically over the Lions by a field goal. They lost a game to Arizona when they missed the field goal. They play close games, but I think they're good, and they've beaten good teams. If you judge by who you've beaten, they have beaten some really good teams. And the Vikings finishing, let's just say, 8-9, I think the Vikings are going to finish over 500. Whether that's 9-8 or that's 10-7, that's a problem for the Carolina Panthers, the Vikings finishing over 500. Suddenly, the San Francisco 49ers look like a real team again. I can't figure this team out. They look like crap 1 week, and then they look awesome the next. Did they not just get blown out? Granted, the Colts are looking like a formidable team right now. But did they not 3 weeks ago just get blown out at home by the Colts, who were struggling at the time? And now all of a sudden the 49ers, I realize it was just Jacksonville. Now they can't lose.
Well, remember they blew out the Rams last week.
Yeah.
I mean, smoked the Rams on Monday Night Football. They won by 20-plus points. They have a 40-plus 41 point differential the last 2 weeks. They got blown out by the Colt McCoy and the Cardinals the week before. They took care of business against the Bears in Chicago, and then the Colts game. I chalk up to that, you know, the weather just being weird and crazy and all of that. But they're 5-5. They put themselves in a good position to make a run. They play Minnesota this week.
Yeah.
So something's got to give there in terms of the playoff seeding, and that's a huge game in San Francisco. I'm going to guess it comes down to the final play, Adam. They have Seattle, Cincinnati on the road, Atlanta, Tennessee. They still have Houston on there, and then they close with the Rams. So a pretty friendly-ish schedule for the 49ers, just in terms of, you know, things breaking their way, the Seahawks playing poorly, the Falcons probably aren't a good team, and revenge game for Kyle Shanahan, I guess. Titans won't have Derrick Henry, and the Rams could But Rams probably won't be sitting anybody in that game. But I like the 49ers to make the playoffs. They're figuring out the run game. Jimmy G is starting to cook. Brandon Ayuk is – Kyle Shanahan sort of unnecessarily put a bunch of people in the doghouse for the 49ers. If you think Brandon Ayuk's just in his doghouse for the first half of the season, and now he's starting to play really well. He's a special talent. Nobody really knows exactly what he did wrong other than vague references to, you know, training and practice habits, right, and all of that. I think both the 49ers and Minnesota, even though they play this weekend, can still make it as a wild card. The Rams look like they're more than likely going to be in. The team to watch, and this may be, again, we might look back at that Washington game for Carolina and say that's what ultimately squeezed them out. The team to watch might be Philadelphia.
No question.
They are running the football right now, and they're running it really well. I don't know how Nick Sirianni wasn't doing this out of the gate, given the personnel that they have. It's like took Miles Sanders' injury and Jordan Howard's development to start running. Jalen Hurts to me has proven that you don't need to draft a quarterback in the first round come 2022, or at least you give him maybe one more year next season, unless they just totally collapse. New Orleans, you know, got to be worried about them. I mean, Trevor Siemian doesn't look like he's going to take him over the top.
Trevor Siemian is. Yeah, you did. You say you don't have to worry about New Orleans?
I think you do.
I wouldn't.
I meant you do have to worry about their status.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah. Like, I think you do. And getting Kamara back matters, but I believe they lost three straight.
Yeah. Yes, they have. Trevor Siemian is not. He's a serviceable backup quarterback.
He's a higher end backup who you just can't have leading your team. And, you know, look, Sean Payton's had to deal with a lot of attrition.
Yep.
In terms of, you know, on the offensive side of the ball. But, you know, the bottom line is there are really only two spots left, because I think the Rams at 7-3 are probably safe.
Oh, yeah. I think they're safe because they're also really good. Those last two spots, I think the Vikings are going to get one. And here's where, because you mentioned the Eagles, that they're running the ball. I understand that the Eagles are not great.
Look at their schedule.
Exactly.
Oh my God, it was a joke.
They spend the next 2 weeks at MetLife Stadium against the Giants and Jets. Both of those games, by the way, are losable if you're the Eagles.
Oh, yeah.
They're both losable. But you play the Giants and the Jets, then you host Washington and the Giants. You have another game left with Washington. The hardest games left are at Washington and home against Dallas. But again, 9-8 might be enough, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, in Dallas, that's a Week 18 game. We've seen, God, I can't remember what Mike McCarthy does, but, you know,
he coaches the Cowboys, allegedly.
No. I meant with the starter. Like, because we know that, you know, Jason Garrett always sat his guys, but that may even be a Jerry Jones edict to rest. Like, it would be pretty crazy if the Cowboys were locked into, let's say, the 3 seed or the 4 seed or even the 2 seed, whatever it is. They've won the division. They're locked into a seed. They can't move up or down. It would be pretty wild if they played Dak Prescott, Zeke Elliott, all these guys in that Week 18 game, if they were locked into a seed. So it's possible that the Eagles end up drawing backups in Week 18 against Dallas, and that ends up being maybe their easiest game. The path is there for Philly to go to the playoffs. You just have to take care of business in 2 weeks in a row at MetLife Stadium.
Are the New England Patriots the best team in the AFC?
They might be. You know, they went on Thursday against Atlanta. I mean, handily, right?
Yeah,
we've
was,
seen the Patriots. Yeah. that was a domination. We've seen the Patriots, and the formula is very clear. It is 2001-like. They have a young, efficient, generally mistake-free, intelligent decision-making quarterback. Granted, drafted much higher than Tom Brady, but and a rookie out there playing pretty well. Probably on track to win Rookie of the Year. They have a outstanding run game with myriad running backs who can, with differing skill sets.
It doesn't matter who they run the ball.
Correct.
Who? What was the kid? The guy's name was Gray? Jonah Gray.
Jonas Gray. Like 300 rushing yards,
and then like gone in 2 weeks.
Yeah, gone, evaporated in the thin air. It never actually happened. It was a figment of your imagination. They have just enough weapons in the pass game, and they're all sort of starting to get on the same page with Mac Jones. And then defensively, you know, they've got a rejuvenated defensive front. Christian Barmore, their second round pick, has been outstanding. Like, you're never going to see an interior defensive lineman win Defensive Rookie of the Year. And Michael Parsons is playing so well, he won't win it anyway. But Barmore has been unreal for them.
Yep.
And he's a game changer. And then Matt Judon, who they've used all over the place, is having an outstanding season. Bill Belichick, you know, for all, you know, we like to rip on Belichick, the GM. That's trendy, right? But he made – this looks like a good draft class with two Bama guys. And then he went out and signed a bunch of people in free agency. And, you know, they haven't all been perfect, but – certainly, Judon and Hunter Henry have been big-time contributors, especially in the last few weeks. With the with Belichick locking down a win on Thursday, and then the Titans and the Bills laying eggs in spots where they were huge favorites. Bills at home against the Colts, and the Titans on the road in Houston, I mean, which is impossible. It has very much opened up the AFC East for the Patriots to try and steal it, and it's very much opened up the AFC for the Patriots to steal the number one seed. They get the Titans this week.
Yep. I cannot explain how Tennessee lost at home to the Houston Texans. I don't care if they don't have Derrick Henry. I just don't. They were never in the game. You can look at the score and say, the only loss was like, 23-12 or something like that. They only lost by, they were never in that game. The Houston Texans were on them from the beginning, and the Tennessee Titans really never had a grasp on that football game at all for a second. And we all have to understand, Houston is bad. They're not. All right, let's get to that. I was in the middle of, I don't understand how Tennessee could lose at home to Houston. I don't care that they don't have Derrick Henry. The Houston Texans are bad. They're not a tough luck team. They're a bad football team. How did that happen?
It's a good question. I mean, Ryan Tannehill, basically the Titans were forced to put everything on Ryan Tannehill. The weather was nasty in Nashville yesterday too, which not that that's an excuse for losing the Texans, but you know, they haven't figured out how to, you talk about Belichick and the Patriots knowing how to lean into their identity and to be who coach to your personnel, right? Well, the problem with the Titans now is without Derrick Henry and with Julio Jones missing, they're basically, the offense is Ryan Tannehill and A.J. Brown. And that's, even for a bad football team, that's kind of easy to defend. It's why I love the Patriots this week, -5.5. It's a lot of points, but Bill Belichick's just going to take away A.J. Brown and force Ryan Tannehill to beat him some other way. And I think it's going to be really difficult to do because that roster is extremely thin when you don't have – you know, when you lose all that personnel and you lose this incredible rushing dimension, yes, they should have beaten the Texans. Don't get me wrong. I mean,
right?
Even missing all those guys, I mean, they have two losses. They have lost to the Jets and the Texans. It's wild. I mean, they went on this win streak where they beat
beat
Rams,
all the good teams, Chiefs,
Rams, Bills, Chiefs, all Saints all in a row, and then it's like bookended by losses to the Jets and the Texans. It's very 2021 NFL and. It's probably going to come back and haunt the Titans at the end of the day because the Colts have climbed back in the division a little bit and they are no longer on cruise control for the AFC number one seed because we thought they were going to be because they have such an easy schedule and they had the Texans twice. But when you lose to the Texans and the Jets, you really screw up your chances to get that bye.
All right, 45 seconds on what's up with the Buffalo Bills. Is this in some ways Josh Allen reverting to the mean, or I'm not suggesting that it is, but it's hard to believe that they have become this pedestrian.
Yeah, I think it's more like Josh Allen was not going to play like he did last year. He wasn't going to take another exponential leap and play like he did last year. And frankly, that yesterday's really all on their defense. Carson Wentz didn't have to do anything. They just got punched in the mouth by Jonathan Taylor. Looks like the best running back in football. And as a result, they gave up five total touchdowns to a running back and like 120 rushing yards in the first quarter. Can't win like that.
No, you can't. By the way, one of the a competing website of yours is asking whether or not the Giants should give Saquon Barkley the big money extension. I mean, no.
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 Yeah. No.
Just draft somebody in the second round.
When are people going to understand? The running back has to be different. It can't be just a guy you pound it to Unless he's Derrick Henry, and I don't think Saquon Barkley is Derrick Henry. Will Brinson, thank you very much, as always, sir. We never talked about Thanksgiving, but Thanksgiving is coming, and that's all people need to know about. We'll talk to you next week, sir.
All right, man. See ya.
NC State historian, my friend, the unofficial mayor of Cat Square, North Carolina, Tim Peeler, joins us to talk State Carolina. Are you a fan of the Supremes?
From Bojangles?
Yeah, I knew that was coming. You're so predictable. All right, let's talk about this football game on Friday night. If I said that this is the most significant game in terms of consequences, I'm not talking about coaching tenures or things like that. I'm talking about standings related. If I said this was the most significant game, how accurate is that?
I don't think it's accurate at all, to be
Excellent.
Honest with you.
What is more significant?
Well, it's significant for one team.
Right.
And that's the difference, I think. There have been times through the years that the consequences of the outcome of the game meant a lot more for both teams. And while I fully anticipate this to be a great game and one of consequences should NC State win and Wake Forest lose, I don't know that you could put it up there with some other games in the history. And I can give you some for instances.
Give me a for instance.
Well, I think, all right, I know people hate it when I do this, but let's go back a century.
Oh, what? No. No, there were no consequences a century ago.
There were awesome consequences.
No, there weren't.
They hated each other and would not play against each other until 1919. And when they got on the field and played and proved they could be nice to one another, they continued the rivalry every year since then.
Okay.
That's consequences.
Sure. Talk radio was just aghast.
It was aluminum can to aluminum can.
Exactly.
Is what it was.
Exactly. All right. Something in the ACC era.
All right. The first time in 1954 when NC State was about ready to eliminate football as a varsity sport, they hired somebody named Earl Edwards to come in and change everything. He lost every ACC game he played for his first two seasons and was getting ready to play North Carolina in 1956 when North Carolina had hired Sonny Jim Tatum to come in and awake the sleeping giant. They were going to build a huge football powerhouse at North Carolina under alum Jim Tatum, and he came in and played against NC State in Chapel Hill, ready to beat them badly. NC State won 26-6. Jim Tatum never won a game against NC State, and NC State still has football today.
But again, I'm talking about the standings. I'm not talking about, I guess Jim Tatum was the first coach brought in to wake up the sleeping giant.
Let's go to 1973, Lou Holtz's first game against North Carolina. Lou Holtz completely changed the atmosphere. Everything at NC State, they went to Chapel Hill. They were playing against North Carolina. They were 0-1-1. North Carolina was 3-0, getting ready to go to Ohio State and play a huge game with national implications. The next week, Holtz and his team caught Vince Dooley by surprise. They scored in the final minute of the game, and Lou Holtz went for 2 points. They did not make it. The NC State fans there were so appreciative of what Holtz did that they gave him a standing ovation as they were leaving the field, and NC State finished second behind North Carolina, who was 11-1 that year in the ACC. Had that game flipped around, it would have been a hugely important game for both the legacy of Lou Holtz at NC State and probably the development of football at UNC under Vince Dooley.
So far, Tim Peeler, NC State historian, what you're telling me is that I'm right, even though it is just one team playing a game of standings significant. That's fine. It probably highlights why this rivalry is not just a regional rivalry, but a local rivalry, where they don't really talk about this, all over the South. They just talk about it here. And when both programs become really good at the same time, and I'm not even saying great, then maybe this will get a little bit more traction. But you've got an NC State team that still has a chance to win the Atlantic. This is the window. And frankly, they would be right there had they beaten Miami down in Coral Gables, but obviously that didn't happen. And Carolina's trying to salvage some semblance of a season here. They're bowl eligible, so it's not for a bowl game. That would be interesting. But, I mean, it's still that rare opportunity for NC State to put themselves in a position to win a division.
Yeah, and that, you know, that's only been possible for the last, what, 10 years, 12 years? So let's not overhype the ability to
ever
go to a division championship.
Ever.
For the first time ever.
Ever.
I get it. Ever in the last 10 years since they've had divisional play.
It's been longer than that.
2004?
Five, right? 2005.
Yeah. So 10, 15 years.
Okay.
So I always like to take the long lens, and when somebody says that they ever played a game this important, I always say, well, yes, of course they have. It's happened before. Like the game I like to call A Tale of Two Richards, when in 1986, Dick Sheridan took his first team to Chapel Hill to play Dick Crum, and
yes.
It was the rise of Dick Sheridan and the fall of Dick Crum when NC State beat North Carolina. On the last play of the game, 35-34, when Mark May, who you might also know as the father of Luke May, accidentally slipped, hit his knee on the turf, and the two-point conversion they were going through failed. So that game allowed NC State to qualify for its first bowl since 1974, and 1978. My numbers get all mixed up
here. It's quite all right.
But and finished second in the ACC. That was a game of tremendous consequence. Dick Crum eventually lost his job after the next season, which opened the door for Mack Brown to show up in 1988.
You just couldn't bring yourself. You had to say Two Richards. You just couldn't go all the way. Even though they were both called Dick Sheridan and Dick Crum, you just couldn't go there. And I appreciate that.
The family show.
Exactly. I appreciate Tim Peeler. So right now on the front porch of the general store in Cat Square, what are they talking about? What are they saying about this game?
They are saying that this game better not interfere with the annual Cat Square Christmas Parade, which is the first Saturday in December, and go directly up against the ACC championship game where NC State to qualify for that.
So they're either rooting for North Carolina or they're rooting for Wake Forest to beat Boston College. That's what you're saying.
I just think that it could be the proper lead-in to NC State being in the ACC championship game in Charlotte, about 45 miles away, with the Cat Square Christmas Parade being at 1 o'clock and the championship game being at, what, 7?
Do we know the championship game is at 7? Have they already announced that yet?
No, I doubt it.
I get the feeling that's going to be a 3:30 game.
Yeah, that's true. But you could still probably make it from the Cat Square Christmas Parade to a 3:30 game kickoff in Charlotte.
When was the last? Have you ever been Grand Marshal of the Cat Square Christmas Day Parade?
No, it's a really tough battle. You got to donate money in a jar to Cat Square Superette, and the person who gets the most money becomes mayor. I've been gone for a pretty long time, so name recognition is paramount to winning mayor.
It's a popularity contest. If we all know it. I'm sorry. You probably deserve to be mayor of Cat Square, unofficial or otherwise. Tim Peeler, you're the best. I appreciate your time. Pac Tim Peeler on Twitter. Sir, enjoy the game. I hope it lives up to the hype of the 1919 game.
And I'm likely to watch the entire game from Cat Square, so there's that.
Even better. Thanks, Tim.
Anytime. Thanks.
You got it.
You've been listening to the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting ADAM to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. Or you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.